in homeschooling. If the foundations aren't there, you're going to give up, you're going to get weary, you're going to burn out. So the same thing is true with instilling a love of learning, that there are goals that have to be in place. One of those is to have the children see that learning is fun. That was one of our goals. We wanted our children to see that learning truly was fun. Now, when I say that, I mean to have that as a basic mindset. That didn't mean that every single thing they did in school they would just think was fun, but just to have that basic mindset that learning really is special. It's fun. And that was actually the concern which propelled us into homeschool. And if you were here last night, Ray told you about that. But our oldest daughter already knew how to read, and we didn't want her to have to slog through some learning to read program because we knew that would bore her, and that was a great way to convince her that learning is just boring and distasteful, which we did not want to do. Another goal we had was to have our children know how to pursue learning on their own. You know, they're handicapped. They don't know how to do that. Our oldest daughter one time was teaching some students who had, she was helping a professor teach students who had, they all had bachelor's degrees, some of them had master's degrees. And various ones of the students would make comments, and they'd say, you know, I'd really like to learn such and such. And she'd say, well, why don't you just get a book and learn it? And it was, their answers were really interesting. They would say things like, well, that's your thing. Or, I don't have the self-confidence to do that. Or, I'm sorry, the self-discipline. I don't have the self-discipline to do that. Or some of them said, well, I just don't like to study things on my own. And some of them said, well, I need class interaction to really be able to process it and understand it. You know what? They were handicapped. They didn't know how to learn something on their own. That's a handicap, and we didn't want our children to have that handicap. So if you really want to instill a love of learning, you have to have a foundation of obedience in place and a foundation of trust. Like I said earlier in the previous talk, that foundation of obedience has to be there so that your children can spend time doing things that are truly creative. Don't make them waste their creativity trying to figure out where the boundaries are, or if you're a truth teller or a liar. Don't make them waste their creativity on that. If that foundation of obedience is in trust, is in place, then they can spend their time doing things that are truly creative. And then even if your child doesn't see the value in studying something, he still will apply himself and do his best. And that's an important lesson to learn, because every career, I don't care what your sons and daughters end up doing, every career is going to have unpleasant tasks. And does that mean when you get to the unpleasant task that you just ignore it or just, you know, take your good old time doing it? No, you'd still have to do it the best you know how, and quickly and well. I mean, even motherhood has parts of it that are not very pleasant. I mean, how many of you just love changing a messy diaper? Or getting up in the middle of the night and cleaning up a child, you know, vomit? I mean, those are tasks that aren't that pleasant. But we don't just leave it and ignore it. We have to do it, so we do it. So it's an important lesson for our children to learn. Also, there has to be a foundation of trust. That means we as parents have to be open to truth ourselves. We have to apply truth personally, even if it hurts, even if it cuts across the grain of how we're living. That means we have to be willing to confess anger or impatience to our children and ask their forgiveness. Our children have to see our own willingness to learn. And so that might mean admitting, I don't know. If they ask you a question and you don't know the answer, just be honest and say, I don't know, but let's go find the answer. Help them find the answer. Or sometimes if a child asks you a question you're uncomfortable with, sometimes parents say, well, you really shouldn't be thinking on that level. It's like, I'm sorry. If the child asks it, they deserve an answer. If they ask it and I don't answer it, guess what? They're going to find someone who will answer it. And then another foundation, if I really want to instill a love of learning in my children, is that I have to be enthusiastic about the whole thing and positive, because I, as the mother, set the tone for the atmosphere in my family. So if I feel bogged down and overwhelmed and I'm going through my day like this, that's going to rub off on the children, guaranteed. But if I can be positive and upbeat about it, they will too. If I want to instill a love of learning, I have to make learning become a way of life. That's very important. Let me read a quote to you. Benjamin Bloom made this comment in the book Stability and Change in Human Characteristics, and I'm quoting now. Your child has already developed half of his total adult intellectual capacity by the time he is 4 years old, and 80% of it by age 8. So, if we wait till our children are school age, we've lost valuable time and opportunities that we will never have again. So we make our job much easier by beginning early. Remember the examples of Hannah and Jochebed that I just talked about. They understood how important it was not to waste those early years. They so infused the souls of their little boys with the things of God that when those little boys were out of their home in environments that were very undesirable, Moses, in an environment that had offered all the world had to offer, all the wealth, all the education, all the power, all the prestige, everything he wanted was right there. And yet what did he choose? He chose to suffer with his own people rather to endure those passing pleasures. And Samuel, well, his mother took him as a young boy to the temple. You would think, oh, well, in God's house, that was a good, safe place. But it wasn't. Remember what it was like in that day. Eli had not taught his sons, so his grown sons were priests, and they were wicked. They would have sexual relations with the women that came to the temple. And here was this little boy in an environment like that. But did he follow the example of Eli's sons? No. He followed God. So you see, those mothers understood the importance of those early years, and they made use of them. So if I want to make learning become a way of life, that means I have to encourage my child's curiosity. Now, however do you do that? Well, when God gave us a little baby, our goal was not, okay, make this baby happy, just pacify them so that you can get done what you need to get done. Our goal was to make sure the baby was having an interesting time. You know, if a child is bored, that is a sure way to squelch their curiosity, and it's a way to have naughty children. So, make sure your baby is having an interesting time. Well, however you do that, well, talk to them. Have you noticed how children love to be talked to? Recently, we were at a church, and I went up to the little 5-month-old baby, and I started talking to him, and the way he responded to me immediately, I said to the mother, "You talk to this baby a lot, don't you?" She said, "Yes, I do." It was obvious. You just knew that baby was talked to by the mother a lot. Talk to them a lot. That's a great way to encourage their curiosity. And when I say talk to them, I don't mean baby talk. If you talk baby talk to your baby, that's like speaking a foreign language to them without the benefits. There are no benefits in it. You know, you talk to your baby, and how does a child learn to talk? By listening. So he hears what you say to him, and then he wants to repeat those sounds. But what's he going to repeat? This mumbo jumbo you've been talking to him all this time. And guess what? We won't recognize it. I mean, even when a baby really is trying to talk, we catch a little bit here and there. But now if you have to try to catch the baby talk sounds that you've been saying to him, that's going to make it a lot harder for the child and for you, because then he still has to learn to talk right. So that, well, we don't want our children to grow up talking baby talk to other people. So let's teach them right from the start. One philosophy my husband and I had, we tried to never let our children do something that we had to undo later. You're saving yourself work. Don't do something that you're going to have to undo down the road. So we didn't talk baby talk to them. Now, if you talk baby talk to them, I'm not saying that that's wrong. It's like that's your privilege, but you're making it harder for yourself. So don't talk baby talk to them, but talk to them a lot. And, you know, when we had our babies, that was before the day and age of Mobies and slings and all that. So I would set the baby and the infant seat right up on the counter where I was working so that I could have eye contact with my baby and be talking to him while I was working. And, you know, you can talk about what you're fixing for supper, what impressed you in your quiet time that day. You know, and will your baby understand it? He won't understand all the words, but he's listening to you talk, and a baby loves to hear your voice. He loves to hear his mother's voice. And you know what? You can actually have conversations with them. You say something to that baby and pause, and what happens? They'll coo or chatter if they're a little older, and then they stop. And then it's your turn to say something again. And then you stop and they coo back. I mean, they're having a conversation. They really are. You can't understand what they're saying, but they're saying something. I remember I had a friend one time, and she, her little one was, I think, two or three. And they were outside in the yard, and this little two-year-old ran up to her, and it just chattered away, and my friend had absolutely no idea what her daughter was saying. And she said, yes, yes. And her daughter turned around and went running over to the neighbors. She had come, obviously, in her mind, she was asking permission to go to the neighbors. Well, of course, the mother didn't understand it, you know. So, but children love to be talked to, and that is how they learn to talk. So talk to them. And you know what? Even a simple thing like dressing your baby, you can tell them, I'm putting your red shirt on today, or I'm putting your brown shoes on, or your white shoes, or whatever. And when you're changing them, you can count their toes or their fingers. Babies love it, and they're learning just automatically. And so it's not like, okay, now it's time for school. Oh, now I have to teach you your numbers, or now I have to teach you your colors. It's like, they just learned it naturally, just every day. Just everyday life. They learned it. Or when you're changing their diapers, you can recite scripture. That is a most wonderful time to start teaching your children Bible memory. You know, we as mothers have the privilege of choosing what's going into those little minds. That's a wonderful privilege we have. So we can choose to have the Word of God go in there. And I started with Psalm 23. That was just a simple psalm. And I would just recite it when I changed their diaper. So how many times a day do you change your baby's diaper? Every time you change it, just recite Psalm 23. If you don't know it, print it out or write it out and put it above your changing table or where you change your baby and read it off. And by the time you do that enough times, you'll know it too. And you know what happens? By the time that child is learning to talk, you can do this. The Lord is my, and then pause. And that little voice will say, and you can say, I shall not, and pause. And that little voice says, want. And you can go down through the psalm like that and just keep reciting it and reciting it. And by the time they can talk, well, they can recite that psalm. Isn't that wonderful? With no work. It just went in. And then you can go on to a new one. Just remember this, though. It goes in very easily, and it goes out easily. So you'll have to be sure to review. If you go on to a new one, don't forget about Psalm 23. Review it, or they will forget it. It goes in easily, but it goes out. So talk to your baby. They love it. And then once your child can talk, listen carefully when he talks to you. Don't tune him out. That's easy to do. Because usually once children learn to talk, they just love to talk and talk and talk. And so it's easy to just tune that out. But, you know, sometimes he'll get to the end of his paragraph and then he'll ask you a question and it's like, oh, what did he say? What do I answer? So don't tune him out. You want them to listen when you talk, so be the example. Listen when they talk. Another way to encourage their curiosity with talking is answer his why questions. Don't discourage them. Many times a child will ask why, not because he's so interested in the answer, but just because he loves to hear you talk. So don't discourage those why questions. We want our children to be curious and ask questions. So see their questions as opportunities and not irritations. I mean, if you're having a really busy day and you're saying, you say something and the child says, well, why? And so you answer that, and they say, well, why? And then you answer that, well, why? And after a while, it's like, I don't know why anymore. But don't get irritated at that. They are enjoying having conversation with you. Now listen, when they're teenagers, do you want them to enjoy having conversation with you? Then don't throw away the opportunity now. That's when it's starting. You're starting to build bridges. You're starting to build a relationship. It starts when they're babies. Don't throw away those opportunities. They're wonderful opportunities. So answer those why questions. I have a friend who said when she was 4 years old, this was her favorite question to her mother. Mother, how do you spell? How do you spell? She loved that question. And she would ask it over and over and over to her mother. And her mother would patiently spell it over and over and over back to her. She said, I am sure my mother spelled that at least 100 times for me. And her mother never once reprimanded her, and her mother never once got impatient with her about it. And today that lady is a grown lady, a very creative person, and does a wonderful job homeschooling her children. Part of it, I'm sure, is because her mother did not squelch her curiosity. She encouraged it. So let's do the same. Let's not squelch that curiosity. Another way to really make learning become a way of life for our children is to let them work with us. You know, children love to do that when they're little. They love to. They want to help you work. That little child will want to help punch down that bread dough, or if you're making rolls, to help roll out the rolls. And are you willing to let them do it? Well, maybe those rolls are going to look a little odd. They're not going to be nice and round like you can make them. Who cares? Do you want your child to love being with you and doing things with you, or do you want your rolls just to be perfectly round so the guests will think what a beautiful cook you are? So let's not let pride get in the way of letting our children help us. In fact, one mom told me my children never needed Play-Doh. They did so much stuff with bread dough that they never needed Play-Doh. They love doing things with bread dough, making, you know, rolls and different shapes. So let your children help you work. But they love to help you clean, too. Dust, vacuum, dishes. And, of course, it takes more time. That's right. But they're learning valuable things, and it's a great time to talk. And it's just a natural time to have discussions. That was one of my favorite times. You know, to have the children working right alongside with me, and it was just a wonderful time to have conversations. And you know, when you're working with someone, you know, suppose you're working with an adult friend, you don't just work in silence side by side, do you? You talk together. The same thing happens with your children. You know, look at them as your friends. You have the privilege of having your friends work right alongside with you, and you can talk. And it's a wonderful time, just as a mother, to be imparting wisdom into those children. Another way to make learning become a way of life is to choose a wise selection of toys. Don't stifle their creativity with too many toys. Children love simple things. Have you ever noticed that? You give them a gift, and they look at the gift, they put it aside, and what do they play with? The box. It came in. They love simple things. You know, common things. After our children were too big to sit in an infant seat in the kitchen when I was working, I would put them in a high chair and, you know, strap them into the high chair and give them nesting measuring cups, measuring spoons, just gadgets I have in the kitchen that are safe that they could play with. And I could talk to them while I was there and they could be playing. But you know, when you do that, a game children love is drop the toy. You know, they're sitting there in their high chair and they drop something. And after a while, everything on that high chair tray is on the floor. Now I have a choice. I can pick it up, or I can say, well, they dropped it, so that's it. I don't have time to pick it up. Again, that's a selfish way to look at it. Do you know what they're really learning? Have you noticed when they drop something, they'll look over? It's like, they're learning about gravity. It's like,
bad. It goes down. And they drop it. Oh, look at that. Every single thing they drop there goes down and never comes back up either. It just goes down. They don't even know they're learning about gravity, but they are. And so if I, as a mom, can see it like that, I can pick those things back up because I'm helping them learn. And I guarantee it, they'll try the experiment again. And so one thing I did is, as soon as I had another child, the older child, even at 2 years old, could pick up the toy. I would explain to the child what was going on in the baby's mind. They're learning about gravity. They're learning that when you drop something, it's going to go down. That's a law God made in the universe. And scientists don't know why it is like that, but God made it like that, and that's how it is. Now, look, your baby sister's learning that. Now watch. Sure enough, she dropped it. See? It dropped. Now you pick it up for her and let her drop it again, because she's learning something important. And so you see what that does to the child. The older child is learning to be a servant to the younger child, and they get excited because they're doing something really important for that younger child. They're helping them learn. And it gives them such a feeling of fulfillment and makes that child feel important and loved and like they really belong in this family. And that's what we want, isn't it? So, don't get frustrated by that game. See it as God wants us to see it. When your children get a little bit older, another way you can make learning become a way of life is to give them riddles and brain teasers. And I like to write one on the chalkboard every week. And sometimes the children would get it early enough in the week, they'd say, oh, please put the next one up. And you can get great books from the library or any used book sales. We've picked up ones here and there. Just to put some on the chalkboard and let them think about it. I don't know if you remember this one from before or not. Let me give you an example of one. This thing all things devours. Birds, beasts, trees, flowers. Gnaws iron, bites steel, grinds hard stones to meal. Slays king, ruins town, and beats high mountains down. What is it? It devours everything. Birds, beasts, trees, flowers. It will even gnaw iron. It will bite steel. It will even grind hard stones to meal. But it will do things like slaying kings. It will ruin towns, giving it enough time. And it will even beat high mountains down. Well, you can think about that a little bit. So anyway, you can do that every week. Put another one up. Because usually what ends up happening is you have to think outside your usual way of thinking of things to find the answer. Another way to instill a love of learning is to spark your children's interest. By that I mean if you get your children really interested in a subject, they'll end up teaching themselves. And that was one of our goals in homeschool, for Ray and I to work ourselves out of a job so that we became tutors instead of the teacher. And that made our homeschooling a lot easier. That meant our children knew how to learn on their own. And it made our job a lot easier. So begin young to teach your children to love books and reading. Look at books with your baby, even when your baby is tiny. Look at books with them. And in this day and age, you can get cardboard books and plastic books and books that you can have a little baby look at. But right from the start, even if they're cardboard books or plastic books, teach them to take good care of them. Don't let them just be, you know, trying to rip pages. Even if he can't rip pages out of that, teach him right from the start to take good care of those books. You don't just throw a book, and you don't try to tear them. And they have to learn how to page a book. Those are important lessons to learn. And we never gave our children, our little children, old magazines just to tear, even if we were done with them. Because, you know, a child loves doing that. But if you let him do that, he's not going to know the difference between you're visiting someone's house and there's a lovely book lying on the coffee table. And guess what that's going to mean to them? Paper. I remember you tear paper. So again, don't let him do things that you're going to have to unlearn. Another way is to read to him. Read to your baby, even your tiny baby. Read to them. And there, I loved just taking a book that had nice pictures and just a little bit of text. Or even if I didn't read the book, just point out something on the picture and point it out, maybe count how many pumpkins were on the page or whatever. Just going through the book with the child, telling them about it, doing something with them in that book. Also, you can have your older children read to the older children, read to the younger ones. Reading is the most important subject you will teach. Because if a child can read well, he's set for life. If he can't read well, he's hindered for life. And if he can't read, he's in bad trouble. So I liked to avoid the pressure and the time frame of, okay, now he's in first grade, he has to learn to read this year, because if he doesn't know how to read, he can't do anything on his own. And maybe it was a year I was having a baby, or maybe it was a year we were moving. It's like, I didn't want that kind of pressure. So I started when they were little, preschoolers, usually about 18 months old. And that meant by the time they were school age, they knew how to read. I never had the pressure. It was just an easygoing, fun thing I did with my little ones. And children are different. It was different for all 9 of our children. Some of them caught on really fast. Some were actually dyslexic. And I was so glad I had started young, because that gave me time to help them see that, okay, since we live in North America, we start reading like this. Now, if they lived in Israel, it would be okay if they would read like that, like they wanted to. But since they're reading English, they have to read it this way. And so right from little, it helped me see, okay, they're looking at it backwards. I could take their finger and go this way, even from little. And it helped a lot. So I'm not going to go through the steps of how I did it. That would take a while, and some of you probably wouldn't be interested in that anyway. If you are interested in it, I'll be glad to share it with you. And you can ask that in question and answer time if you want, but I'm just not going to take the time if you really don't want to know. Then when a child has learned to read, have lots of good books available for them to read. Living books, not twaddle, like Charlotte Mason calls it. You know what? Have you read Charlotte Mason, any of her works? Okay, living books. Books that are interesting, not twaddle. Things that just aren't worth reading. And there are some things that have good content that just are boring. Don't force your children, at least not at a young age. Now, sometimes when they get to high school, they do have to read some information that isn't of first interest to them. And it's good for them. It's a good discipline for them to have to go through something and get out of that what really is the good material. But you know, when your children are young, don't do that to them. How many of you have ever read the book Gifted Hands by Ben Carson? Okay, good. So you're familiar with that book. That is a very interesting story. Ben Carson is a doctor that works at Johns Hopkins University Hospital in the United States. He was born to a black father and mother, and the father left the family, and the mother was left to raise her 2 sons. She did not know how to read, but she was determined that her boys were going to make something of themselves, and she didn't want them to have to struggle like she did because she didn't know how to read. Well, Ben was the younger of the 2 boys, and he was in 5th grade, and he was failing. He was at the bottom of his class. He didn't like school. He just did not do well at all. And so the mother decided that this had to change, and this was what she said. She said to her boys, I want you to go to the library. They lived in town, and they weren't far from the library. And so when they came home from school, she was working, because it was up to her now to support the family. So she wasn't home. She said, I want you to go to the library. I want you to get 2 books, and you have to read 2 books every single week. And you are not allowed to go out in the street and play with your friends until all your work is done. And, of course, these books had to get read every week, too. And they couldn't watch TV anymore, except I forget what the, you know, she really, really cut down on their TV watching. They thought this was awful, especially Ben. But they knew better than to argue with their mother because she had that foundation of obedience in place. And so they didn't like it one bit, but they obeyed because mom said they had to do it. So they did it. And you know what happened to Ben? By the end of the year, he went from the bottom in his class to the top. And suddenly he loved learning. He loved it. And now things were fun and interesting, and he never stopped. He went on to become an outstanding doctor at Johns Hopkins University. Well known today, and he's written books. All because his mother cared about him and made sure that he knew how to read and read well. So that is a sure way to help our children have that love for learning. Now, wherever can you find ideas for good books? Well, there are books actually written that have book lists in them, like Honey for a Child's Heart and Books Children Love. If you're familiar with Sunlight Curriculum, they put out book lists for each grade level. And those are nice starting places. And I'm not saying you will agree with every book in there. You'd be unusual if you did, you know. But it's a nice place to start. It's like, if you don't even have any idea, well, what are some really good books on this grade level? Those will give you great ideas. And then you can sift through it and see, okay, now I don't really like that book. Oh, here's a great book. And it gives you a starting place. And then also, you can go to book sales, yard sales, thrift stores, an excellent place to get books. We have hundreds and hundreds of books, many that we paid 25, 50 cents for. And so it's a great place to get books. How do you know if a book is good? Well, let me tell you some factors that helped us determine if a book was good. We wanted it to have a realistic view of life. That didn't mean it couldn't have action or excitement, but we wanted it to have lots of lessons to be learned, lots of insights into life, and lots of parallels to the real world. The Bible is actually a great example of good literature. You know, it has stories of people doing wicked things. You can read the Bible and find out about people who murdered, who assassinated, who lied, who plotted evil things, who raped, who committed adultery. And yet, the Bible is not explicit with the details about that sin. And the sin is never portrayed in an appealing, tantalizing way that just makes you curious about that sin and maybe want to try it yourself. The Bible never does that. Instead, it illustrates the certain consequences and the devastating consequences of sin, both to the evildoer and also to other people who receive what happens when people sin. And in the end, the evildoer gets what he deserves. So that's important to remember when we are finding books. There are books we don't make available to our children. We don't make books like, we've never made books like Nancy Drew, Hardy Boys, Mandy books. That's because they are so unrealistic. There's just no way children can do what those children or teenagers do. The plot is unrealistic. The view of life is unrealistic. Life isn't a continuous thrill. In fact, we were in a church one time, and the 12-year-old daughter made a comment to one of our daughters, and her diet was Mandy books. And she said, life is just so boring. I thought, poor child, that's all she's read, basically. Just Mandy books. And that's what she thinks real life is. And so she thinks, oh, life is so boring. Poor child. Her mother didn't have her reading the right kind of books, or she would have realized life is not boring. Other books we didn't make available were Grace Livingston Hill, Jeanette Oak, Beverly Lewis. Go ahead, list all the romance authors. I don't even know them. Because they portray an unrealistic view of romance and love. And those books have few lessons to be learned, few insights into life. And reading those books, you know, it's kind of like watching TV. They portray an unrealistic fantasy world that's so unreal to how you're going to live out your life. And romance novels can be to a girl like porn to a boy. In this sense, They make unrealistic expectations. And if you're married, the spouse will not live up to the character in that romance novel. And in fact, I had a married woman tell me one time, she said, she was hooked on Jeanette Oak books, and she said she'd read those books, and then guess what she'd do? Compare her husband to the hero in that book. Do you think he could measure up to it? Absolutely not. He was human. He wasn't made up. Her husband wasn't a made-up character. And so he couldn't live up to that. And so then she was resenting that, and she found herself, you know, being drawn to the man in the book instead of being drawn to her own husband. And when God opened her eyes to what was happening, she threw away those books. But that does happen. Just like if a man looks at porn, he'll be drawn to those kinds of pictures and women that look like that. Well, a woman can be drawn away from her own husband by reading those kinds of books. And if you allow a young girl to fill her mind with those, she is not looking realistically at what she should be looking for in a husband, and it sets her up to make a bad choice. Another way to spark a child's interest, besides books, is to begin young to develop their art tastes. You know, expose them to realistic art. Have good books in your house that have good art in them. Now, I'm not saying that every single book has to have wonderful art, but have enough books with wonderful art in your house that your children can look at it and have their minds filled with that as to what they would like to imitate, because that is how they'll learn to draw. What they're looking at will help them learn how to draw. Also, we didn't give our children coloring books. They got enough coloring books from grandparents and aunts and uncles. Instead, we made sure they had plenty of paper, pencils, and crayons, and encouraged them to draw pictures of their own and color those. And that really paid off. You need to encourage their efforts with sincere and enthusiastic praise. I know to our third child came along, he compared what he was doing with what his two older sisters were doing. Excuse me. Of course, he was younger than they were, and it didn't look like theirs. And he was so discouraged. So I talked to our two older children about it. I said, you know what? He's younger. His artwork doesn't look as nice as yours yet. So we really have to encourage him extra much. And so they would help me. We'd all encourage him together, and anything he made would go up on the refrigerator right along with their drawings. And you know what? He got over that feeling of inferiority and tried, just like they did. And he got really good at drawing, too. So encourage their efforts. And then save samples of their work. Keep it in a file. And this allows them to see their progress they're making. And another thing that happens, it will encourage the younger ones. You know, by the time our ninth child came along, can you imagine what the older children were drawing like by that time? Much, much beyond what she could draw. And she looked at their drawings, and she was so discouraged, she didn't even want to start. So I went to the file, and I pulled out their samples. I said, now look what they were doing when they were 3 years old. It's like, oh, I can do better than that already. Because now she had lots of older teachers helping her. And that really encouraged her to keep trying. And I had to work a lot harder with her than any of the others. And I think that was one reason. Because she'd try something and it just didn't look like what theirs did. But she kept trying. And now I don't have to encourage her to try anymore. She tries and does a great job. And allow them to develop their own style. You know, encourage their creativity along the way. Let them develop their own style in artwork. When our oldest two were probably 9 and 7, we were living in the Washington, D.C. area, and we loved going to the Smithsonian. Well, we learned to know the head of the exhibits at the National Archives in Washington, D.C. He was a great artist. So one time we invited his family over for a meal, and Ray showed him samples of the children's artwork, and he said, we really want them to, you know, keep progressing. What do you suggest we do for them? And he looked at their artwork and he asked us what we were doing, and we told him, you know, we just give them lots of paper, pencils, pencil crayons, different mediums, and encourage them and tell them, you know, try to give them lots of time and lots of means to do it. He said, don't do anything else. Just keep doing that. We were thinking maybe we should give them, have someone, you know, do art lessons with them or something. He said, don't do that. Just keep doing what you're doing. So, okay, we just kept doing what we were doing for the next 4 years, and then we moved to another area. And we thought, well, maybe we should see again what we should do next. I mean, these were our oldest children. We were feeling our way. We didn't really know what we were doing. And so he went to the head of the art department of the college in the town where we were living and took samples along and showed them to that professor, and they said, don't do anything different from what you're doing. They said, if you give that child art lessons, that teacher's style is going to be forced on your children. He said, just keep doing what you're doing and let them develop their own style. So we did. And it was really interesting. When they wanted to know a new technique or how do I shade this like this, and they didn't know, we'd go to the library, they would get out books, and I remember one time one of our girls said to me, you know, I tried this technique and it just isn't my style. It's like, fine. So we'll try another book until you can find something that works with your style. And that was a real blessing. Also, begin young to teach them a love for good music. That is another way to instill a love of learning. Listen to excellent music, because again, your children are going to imitate what they hear. So if you let them listen to music that's sung out of tune, guess what? They're going to sing out of tune. If you are sure you're listening to music that's sung in tune, that is really going to help them sing in tune. And sing children's songs with them. We made that mistake with our oldest child. Ray and I knew how to read music, so we decided in family devotions we were just going to go through the hymnal. So if we knew the song, fine. If we didn't, we just sight read it and sang it. Well, guess what happened? I was thinking, why doesn't our child sing? You know, we love to sing, and this child wasn't really singing. So why don't they sing? Then we realized, well, the poor child, they aren't hearing a song twice. You know, every night we sing a different song. And so then I started just singing a lot. And in family devotions, we started singing children's songs over and over, and during the day I would sing lots of children's songs, and that made a difference. So encourage their efforts at the stage they're at, too. Don't downplay your child's abilities. One time we had guests, and we knew the one daughter was learning to play the accordion. And so we asked her if she would play it for us. And you know what her mother said? Oh, she can't play very well. You know, you don't want her to play. And it's like, I felt like clapping my hand over the mother's mouth. It's like, please, don't discourage your daughter like that. Let her play. She loved playing. Encourage her where she is. So what if she doesn't sound wonderful? Who cares? She's learning. And that's what counts. She wanted to learn. So encourage that. There was another mother that came and wanted our daughters to give her younger daughters piano lessons. But then you know what? Her older daughter didn't want to take lessons because she said, well, they know how to play the piano better than I do. Fortunately, her parents didn't reward her pride. They had her take lessons anyway. I mean, I hope you want to take lessons from someone who knows how to do it better than you do, or why take the lessons? So encourage your children's efforts at the stage they're at, but then at the same time insist that they can do what they can, that they do what they can. Also capitalize on their personal interests. That will be another way to really spark their interest. And that's going to vary according to your children, because children's interests are very different. We had a child that loved science, loved astronomy, loved weather. This daughter just ate it up. You know, when we had composition time, she'd write compositions about it. And when we went to the library, she'd get books out on her own to read about it. Well, the daughter, right older than her, could have cared less about stars and things like that, but this other daughter was so interested in the weather and stars and things like that, that it actually rubbed off on the older daughter. And so she started getting out books about stars, and to this day she loves stars and constellations and things like that. And that all started because of the interest another sister had. And so encourage those interests your children have. One of our sons wanted to see if he could just live off the land. I wonder if I could live off the land. So we said, go ahead, try it. And so he decided he was, one of the things he was going to do was gather lamb's quarter seeds, which I always considered a weed. So he gathered all those seeds, a huge amount of seeds, ground them into flour, and then he said, Mother, can I make pancakes out of this? So I always let our children know, you're welcome to try things. You just clean up after yourself, but you're welcome to try it. So he did. He made us some lamb's quarter pancakes. Well, you know what that meant? We had to be willing to eat the experiment, too. It was more interesting than tasty, but it was an excellent learning experience. Another way to spark your child's interest is to expose them to stimulating conversations. So make mealtime a valuable time. Don't waste that time. It's so easy to let mealtime just degenerate into worthless talk. Have you ever noticed that? And younger ones especially, once you have older ones and younger ones can derail a discussion very easily. You know, Ray would start a discussion on something, and so the discussion would be going, and a younger one, so, you know, everyone's thinking. We're thinking about the question, and, you know, what does that mean? And the younger one starts talking about a totally different subject, and before you know it, you haven't even answered the question, and you're just doing something else. So we decided, you know what, this isn't good. So Ray said, okay, children, for the younger children, I want you to listen to the conversation, and if you have something to say on the discussion that we're having, you may say it, but you have to raise your finger like this. And, you know, a child can sit there eating with one finger up like that till they're acknowledged. And you know what, that made a world of difference. Now, instead of just being off in their own little world, thinking their own little thoughts, it's like, hey, I want to talk too. I want to participate in the discussion. So they learned to listen. Oh, now isn't that a valuable lesson? They learned to listen. And they listened to the discussion. And then if they had something they wanted to contribute, they could raise their finger and Ray would acknowledge them. And they could add what they wanted to say too. And that way it let us as parents choose the topic of discussion. It let the discussion be discussed fully. The conversation wasn't interrupted, and it was a blessing. So you can, it's like, well, what do you discuss? Well, you know, one thing that happened after the trade towers went down, guess what discussions that triggered? You know, is it right for Christians to help protect our country from terrorists? Is that right? Why is it right, or why is it not right? That was a great discussion time. Or you can share something special that God blessed you with that day, maybe an answer to prayer. Share that with your children. Or you can present the dilemmas, maybe a dilemma you faced that day, and ask your children, what would you do about that? It's a great teaching time. Also, you can expose your children to knowledgeable people. I remember when we lived in the Washington, D.C. area, Ray was working at Goddard Space Flight Center, and he was working with a physicist. And this couple had no children, but we loved having them over. And he would talk about things like Einstein's theory of relativity and time travel and space and black holes. And, you know, it got the daughter I was talking about that was so interested in scientific things, she got so interested in black holes when we went to the library. Guess what the book was she checked out? A book about black holes. She wanted to learn more about it. Or his wife would tell us about, she was translating a book from Swedish into English, and it was about the effects of too much exposure to microwaves and what can happen and how it can break down the body chemistry somehow, and then people develop allergic reactions when they're around electricity. I mean, we had never heard of that kind of thing before. And so she was telling us about this book she was translating and explaining it to us, and it was highly fascinating to all of us. Another thing you can do is interact with people of other cultures. You can have missionaries in your home, host foreigners. I know when we lived in New York City, When Ray was out street witnessing, he met a Hindu priest, and he met him various times. And finally he said, why don't you come to our place for a meal? Well, this Hindu priest had never been anywhere outside of a Hindu house for a meal, so that was a pretty big step for him. And we had never hosted a Hindu either, much less a Hindu priest. So after he accepted the invitation, it's like, okay, children, what do we fix for a Hindu priest? So guess what? We had to do some research. What can they eat and what can they not eat? Because we wanted it to be a blessing. We wanted it to be a real testimony for the Lord Jesus, and we didn't want to offend him in any way. So the children and I did research and figured out what would be a menu that he could eat. And then that sparked their interest. So then we read a book about a Hindu who had become a Christian, and they really enjoyed that book. Or we have friends who would host they lived close to a university. Well, you know, you always have breaks, like spring break, Christmas break, and those students that are here from foreign countries have nowhere to go. So they would open their home to those students, and it was a wonderful opportunity to share the Lord Jesus. And also a wonderful opportunity for their children, and they themselves too, to learn about other countries. And it was so exciting to them because one Christmas, one of the couples that was staying with them, they actually came to know the Lord Jesus. And that was such an exciting thing for that family. Okay, well, it is time to stop. I'm just going to say this yet. Make assignments that are truly valuable. If you want to instill a love of learning, avoid busy work. And that was one of the concerns that even thrust us into homeschool right from the start. We didn't want Rochelle to repeat what she already knew. So avoid mindless things like filling in the blanks. We have avoided lots of workbooks, and do other things instead. Have living books for history and science. And avoid making your child do work that he already knows. I mean, why does he have to do 30 math problems if he can do half of them? And it shows you whether he knows the work or not. Don't bog him down with that kind of thing. So, if you're ever plagued with these kinds of questions, well, I'm not a creative person, so how do I ever make school interesting? Or, you know, how can I motivate my child? All we have to do is remember our Heavenly Father. He's the master of creativity. All we have to do is look out the window. Just look out there. We see tremendous beauty and variety. I mean, there are over 100 different kinds of maple trees, would you believe? That's just one thing. And so this Heavenly Father we have, we can come to as his daughters and ask him for ideas. Lord, I don't know how to do this. Give me a creative idea. Show me how to do this. And you know what? Our Heavenly Father is glad to do that. He wants us to tap into his boundless creativity and resources, and we have the privilege of doing that. Okay, I forget. Are we supposed to have question and answer time now, or are we supposed to eat? Shall we have question and answer time as we eat? Why don't we just go down, and you can ask questions while you eat, and I'll answer them. Would that be good? Oh, that is a thought. Well, could we sit up here and eat? Is it allowed to sit up here and eat? If you don't usually do that, that's okay. I'm just trying to... Okay, does anyone have questions? over what we've covered so far. Suzanne.
You were saying avoiding busy work.
Yes.
That's a big question on my mind. Because I'm wondering, I don't feel like I'm really qualified to know what's necessary and what's not. I depend very heavily on books for art school.
Mm-hmm.
But is it necessary for them to do science every year, history every year, health every year? Or do you just put them through a good one, maybe once or twice in their upper grades, and they learn basically everything? Or reading, for example. I love reading books and reading with books because the stories are beautiful stories and they apply it to their life and they take the story and work with it, like what did it mean when it said this, and they have lots of writing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't enjoy it at all.
That was going to be my question. Do your children enjoy it?
They know how to read already. So I'm wondering, well, is it a waste of time to put them
yes.
in a reading book every year?
I put mine through a reading book every year until they could read orally beautifully. I wanted my children to be able to read aloud. I mean, even for my boys, I want them to be able to read to their own children someday and have their children enjoy being read to by their daddy. And I want my girls to be able to read beautifully to their children. So I would choose a book that they loved, that they couldn't wait to, let's have reading. And it was oral reading. Because I knew my children could comprehend. And, you know, usually in spelling, you know, they ask, okay, what's a synonym of this? What's an antonym of that? They learn that kind of thing. Don't bog reading down with it. So I didn't even do workbooks. It's like, do they know the meaning of that or don't they? If they're excited about reading and they love the story, they know what it means. For science, I never did, in first and second grade, I never did science, history, that kind of thing, because my focus was I want you to learn to read well, and I want you to learn to do math well, because those are the foundations. If they don't know those two subjects well, they are sunk. So that was where my focus was. And then after that, I would add things in. I did not do health every year. Where we live in North Carolina, we don't have to do health every year. I would do first aid sometimes because I felt like that was an important thing for a child to know. So I would do that, I don't know, maybe once every 5 years, something like that. And I would do health sometimes. Like now with Rosetta for Health, we're going through some books like Be Your Own Doctor, Charcoal Remedies, you know, like books like that on herbs, because I want her to know about herbs. So that's our focus for health this year. But no, we don't do health every year. Also, when we had science and history, I didn't do, like I would do maybe science Monday and Wednesday, history Tuesday and Thursday, and then Friday, if we were having health, we'd do health or first aid or something like that. And again, we did a lot of reading living books. I let the children read and read and read on those subjects. Tried to find really interesting books, tried to find living books. And you know what? They learn so much. And they can talk about it. They can tell you about it. And at supper time, you know, your husband can say, well, what did you learn about science today? Or in the, you know, whatever book it was they're reading. And they can, then they have to think about, okay, now what did I read today? And they have to say it orally. It's like giving an oral report, but they don't know that. And so they learn a lot, and it sticks. Whereas if you take them through textbook after textbook, you know, it's like, okay, and it's twaddle, like Charlotte Mason says. It does not stick. It's a waste of their time. And, I mean, think about it. How much do you remember of grade school that you went through? A lot of it goes, phew. So, have them read things that are interesting, and it's going to stick much more than just taking them through boring books and workbooks that make mom feel good, because now I know exactly what they've gotten through. Or maybe because, like you said, the mom enjoys it, but the children don't. Don't stifle their creativity by forcing them into the way of learning that you like. We as moms have to be willing to do that for our children. They don't all learn like we do. So recognize that. They have different learning styles. Let's not stifle that creativity. And then they'll have time to do other things. That was another thing. You know, you have time to do creative things then. And they have time to pursue their own interests, which is what you want. You really want those children to be creative because it's going to make a difference in all of life to them. Yes, in North Carolina, we have to give achievement tests every year. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And even some years where we lived where they didn't have to have it. When we lived in, you know, it just varies from state to state. They had different requirements, but there were always ways of checking up to see how am I doing. And even when we lived in states where they didn't require certain things, I still did it because I wanted to keep track of what are my children doing? Are they really learning? Okay, are there any other questions? Yes.
Can I just comment on
that? Sure.
And I was glad I never do that because I want to, like you said, focus on reading. But I have a daughter who is just, she cannot get enough science or enough history. And those are the two things I hate. But like you said, we can use summary for some of you. You can choose out of there. But just simply reading to your child a book on science. And even if you'll get the experiment done in the week, and I have very, very low kids. But my daughter will just take the science experiment book and do it on her own. And I don't do any worksheets with her because I don't have the time. I don't have the physical time in the day. But she does it better without the worksheet because she's not my daughter. She's just simply doing what is interesting to her. Or, like, she just butterflies. She cannot get enough butterflies. And every year we go to the garden and look for butterflies. I don't do much other science in those weeks, and she just learns a lot. She looks through the books I have, and don't ever underestimate just reading a good book to a child or going to the internet. My husband is very good at this. And she'll come home and she'll say, I need to know this. And I'll say, what are you doing with me? I'm sure you can tell me what kind of caterpillar that is. Bring it here and ask her to your picture so it's counting on you to find a day's list in the chart. And there's so much good in that.
Right.
It's just
something I need to be children. They just love to learn. That's right. Thanks a lot. And that's exactly what you want to encourage. Because that's natural for children to want to learn. So encourage it. Okay. Anyone else? Okay.